It's in between Judges and 1 Samuel. I don't know the page number because I haven't got the normal size church Bible because I forgot to bring my reading glasses. But if you can find Ruth chapter 1 verse 1 and I'll start reading. By the way, over the last month I've had attended three fantastic messianic festivals in Italy. And one of them, we had 25 unsaved Jews gate crash a messianic conference with the permission of the organisers. Ruth 1, chapter 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man from Bethlehem in Judea, together with his wife and sons, and we can record from this point, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name Naomi, and the names of the two sons Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judea, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah, the other named Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and a husband. When she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, Naomi and her daughter-in-laws prepared to return home there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each one, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each one will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them, and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have more sons who would become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I'm too old to have another husband. Even if I did, there's still hope for me. Even if I had a husband tonight and gave birth to sons, would you wait for them to grow up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me." At this they wept again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. "Look," Naomi said, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be ever so severely, if anything but death separates me from you." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go up with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and people exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi," she said. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law. Arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Let me go in the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone whose eyes I find favour." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it worked out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, from the clan of Elimelech. Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of the harvesters, "Whose young woman is that?" The foreman replied, "She's a Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather between the sheaves of the harvesters.' She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along with the girls. I have told them not to touch you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water of the men of the jars the men have filled." At this she bowed down with her face on the ground. She explained, "Why have I found such favour in your eyes that you even notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about how what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and come with a peak to a people you do not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you've done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Lord, I pray that what I say may be inspired by your Spirit and informed by your word. Amen. There are two things not to do when there is danger. The first one is to ignore it and do nothing. The second one, at the other end of the pendulum and equally as unbalanced and equally as dangerous, is to hit the panic button rather than trust the Lord or use rational calculation. Preferably both, although trusting the Lord is better than rational calculation. It does help if you do both. People usually succumb to danger because they either ignore it and hope it goes away, or else they hit the panic button and do something dumb. And this is what Elimelech does at the beginning of the chapter. And if you do something foolish, you tend to put yourself away from the God's provision and protection, and you actually make your life fairly vulnerable. If there is a famine in Israel, you are not meant to run away to Moab. It's not what you are supposed to do. I mean, if there was a famine in the Negev today, would it make the life of an Israeli in the middle of the Negev any easier if they crossed the border into Jordan or Egypt? Look, these were pagans who hated them. As well as making a silly thing to do, and actually against the Torah, a thing not to do, because you're supposed to be living in Israel, you're not supposed to be living outside it, is also not a socially responsible thing to do either. There are two things that chapter 1 tells us that you can overlook. All of the detail that is in the Bible is there for a purpose. It says that these people came from Bethlehem. Bethlehem is the breadbasket. It's the most fertile part of Israel. That is why it's called Bethlehem, House of Bread. Somewhere it's called House of Bread. Guess why? Because you can grow bread there. So they're coming from the most fertile place. And also they're Ephraimites. And if you go into Leviticus, you'll find out apparently that means that they're farmers. And it also becomes obvious later in the text that as they leave the country, they haven't done a deal with a kinsman redeemer to look after the property when they're away. Basically, these are farmers who are basically just boarding up the farm and quitting the country. I mean, if you're farmers in the most fertile part of the country, shutting down your farm in the middle of the famine is not exactly socially responsible, is it? It's not socially responsible, so the left won't be happy with you. It's also personally foolish, so the right won't be happy with you either. It's actually exactly the wrong thing to do. And what happens is that, yes, they cross the border into Moab. And first of all, the husband dies, leaving the widow. So what's the widow going to do? Well, she either goes back to Bethlehem with her tail between her legs, or else she says to her sons, stay here and get married. And if you're in the middle of pagan Moab, are you going to find a nice Jewish girl to marry? Answer, no, you're going to end up marrying pagans. So notice how the panic button leads to the compounding of error and things get worse and worse and worse. They're living where they shouldn't be living. The husband dies and the sons marry pagans. Well, that is not exactly progress, is it? And then eventually the sons pass away too. And in a sense, it's sad. And in a sense, Jesus himself says, look, the rain falls upon the good as well as the wicked. Are the pilgrims who were slaughtered any worse or better than the pilgrims who survived? Well, in a sense, death could happen to anyone anyway. So in a sense, it's sad. But also, in a sense, they brought it upon themselves by putting themselves outside the law's protection, by doing what they shouldn't do. Yes, they shouldn't be living in Moab and they shouldn't be taking pagan wives. So having lost her husband in Moab, Naomi then loses her sons. And life has become very bitter for her. Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. And she turns round to her two daughters-in-law and says, why are you here? Do you think I'm going to find another husband? Do you think I'm going to bear more sons? Will you wait until they're of marital age? No. There's nothing more between us. When my sons were taken, the link between us went. You're free now. Why don't you go back to your family and take a local husband? And at first, to their credit, the two daughters-in-law said, this is not what we're going to do. But when she counted the cost of leaving home, going to Israel, which is a foreign country, putting herself under the God of Israel, being amongst these strange Jews and having to presumably find a good Jewish boy to marry, Orpah does her maths and her enthusiasm for the trip somewhat evaporates and she goes home. But with Ruth, it's different. Ruth replies, don't urge me to leave you or turn back. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me if I ever so severely, if anything but death separates you from me. I'm not turning back. I'm going where you're going. Your people, the people of Israel, will be my people. Your God, the God of Israel, will be my God. I'm not turning back. I'm going with you. And Ruth becomes the precedent for most of the people sitting in this room. Guess what? She's the first messianic Gentile in history. What I find interesting at this point is that there is something about Ruth that even though Naomi and her sons and her husband, even though the four of them have made poor choices and messed up their lives, they have been a sufficiently strong and good testimony for Ruth to not say, well, you make dumb choices, so you must be following a dumb God and part of a dumb people. But instead of that, she says, I want to go where you go. My people will be your people and your people will be my people and your God will be my God. And I want that to really encourage us. Do you have to live a perfect life in order to be an effective witness? Naomi's life was very imperfect, but she must have been an effective witness. Otherwise, there is no way Ruth would make that decision. If we had to be flawless in order to be in a relationship with the Lord and go to heaven, heaven would be a very empty place because Jesus would be the only man there. The idea is not that you become wonderful and then you know God. It's then you know God, and with the help of the Word and the Spirit, your life becomes wonderful. The whole problem with religion and with legalism, even amongst evangelical Christianity, is that it's great at putting the cart before the horse rather than the horse before the cart. If we had to be wonderful before we got anywhere with God, we would never get anywhere, would we? And that should be obvious to lots of people in evangelical churches who do seem to think that you have to be wonderful before you get to know God. I mean, where's their teaching on original sin when they really need it? They say that sin is so pervasive and dangerous, and then they expect people to be sinless before they find God. That is really wacky. Now, Naomi's testimony would be very imperfect. She hasn't exactly made sensible decisions. And she's talking about how bitter her life has become and how God has afflicted her. And she doesn't blame God for doing it. Look, if you make foolish decisions when you hit the panic button, you do put yourself outside his provision and protection. She shouldn't have been in Moab. Her sons should not have married pagans. And yet, despite her imperfection, there is still enough in Naomi's testimony to actually attract Naomi. Naomi wants to follow the God of Israel. Naomi wants to be part of the people of Israel. Naomi wants to abandon the pagan world and go to Bethlehem. That is very striking when you think about it. She really is the first messianic Gentile grafted into the vine. You don't have to be perfect before you're a good testimony. I mean, if you do follow the Word and are filled with the Spirit, it does help. I'm not telling you be imperfect and flawed so that you can prove that it can work. Look, let good things happen in spite of yourself, not because of yourself. She's still a positive witness. And Naomi still wants to go. The other thing I want to stress about Ruth's reaction is that there is a move here from compassion to relationship to covenant. First of all, there is compassion. She could have, as Naomi suggests, Ruth could have reacted to the death of her husband by saying, well, my family relationship is finished. I no longer have any responsibility here. I'm going back to my parents and I'm finding a Moab husband. And that would be the normal thing to do. And that's what Orpah eventually does once she counts the costs. But Ruth is different. There is real compassion. I don't want you to go back as a widow by yourself. I want to go back with you and find a husband where you are, rather than dump you to make a journey by yourself. I mean, you have an unaccompanied widow making a 150-mile trip. Boy, is it compassionate, or should I say more appropriately, girl, is it compassionate to go with her? You have compassion leading to the building of a relationship. And then that relationship puts them in covenant, a type of covenant that the relationship between the mother and the mother-in-law actually in the end outlives the death of the son that is the reason for them being originally brought together. The compassion moves into a relationship that is not severed by circumstances. The compassion goes into a relationship, and the relationship goes into a covenant. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. I'm going with you, and I'm finding a nice Jewish boy because I want to follow the God of Israel, and I want to be adopted into the Jewish nation. That's what she's saying. So the two of them go back to Bethlehem. And presumably they're parking out in the abandoned farm. Having survived the 150-mile walk, the next problem is, what do we eat? Well, actually, there is some provision for that, because the Torah instructs farmers, and maybe Naomi is aware of this coming from a farming family, but the Torah does instruct farmers that when you go up and down with your plough and you collect all the food in your field, you're expected to leave the corners of the fields for orphans and widows and the strangers and the destitute. So if you know that, and presumably Naomi would have been aware of it, because from a farming factory she would have had destitute people plucking barley and wheat from the corner of her field. Now she's going to have to do the plucking. At least you can get some subsistence that way. It's how the Lord provides for it. And so she goes in to find a field where she can choose to take food from the corner of the field. Basically, the regular workers at harvest time would go up and down the field. The leftovers and the corners of the field, you would have debris that was edible food. You would collect it into a basket, you'd take it home, you'd cook it. And she finds herself working in the field of Boaz, who is a relation of hers. He's a relation from her husband's side. That's Elimelech, Naomi's husband. So there is some kind of family connection there. Now, Boaz could have done two things. He could have turned round to Ruth, as Ruth is in the corner of the field picking up the leftovers, and he could have said, I know you're a pagan, and I know that your mother-in-law brought the problem upon yourselves. I know that you're entitled by the law to just stick to the corner of the field, but the corner is a corner. If you go in beyond a certain point, I will take you to court. I will get you locked up for theft. Because you are part of the undeserving poor. You're just a pagan woman, and your mother-in-law brought it upon herself by her stupidity. There's a famine, and her husband's a farmer, and he stops producing food. Well, that's socially responsible, isn't it? And then you come back just because you're part of the undeserving poor. You don't deserve worship. I'm happy if you starve. If you go in from the corner of the food, I'm getting you. That's one response he could have given. The response he does instead is one of compassion. He actually sees the positive side. He doesn't see her as a pagan. He doesn't see her as the undeserving poor. He doesn't see her as the daughter-in-law of someone who's made foolish decisions. It's not as he sees her at all. What is Boaz's response? And remember, this is before any thought of romance goes in. His response is, look, other farmers may not respond the way that I do. Follow after the servants. Take what you like. Drink water for free. Use a shelter when you're too hot. Later on, he's going to say to his employees, look, let her cheat with the boundary line. If there's a particular clump of barley just outside where she can glean, why don't you pull it up and throw it in her zone? Later on, he comes with a blanket and with some barley. Actually, his response to Ruth in a way parallels Ruth's response to Naomi. The compassion goes into relationship. Instead of standing afar and tolerating her being there and saying, don't you dare glean inside the line, he feels compassion for her. He doesn't see her as the pagan outsider. He doesn't see her as the undeserving poor. He actually sees the one positive thing. Look, you came back here to look after your mother-in-law. He's not aware of her interest in the God of Israel or being adopted into the Jewish people yet. He just sees someone who's been compassionate to her mother-in-law. And he sees her compassion towards Naomi. And Boaz feels compassion towards Ruth. And that compassion drifts into relationship. And she basically is almost like a friend of his. She can take what she likes from the corner of the field. He's not going to obstruct her. Instead, he's warning her. He said, please stick to my farm because other farmers may not have the mentality that I have. You're safe here. I'll make sure that there's enough for you to glean. Stay here. Compassion drifts into relationship. The latter part of the story, of course, I'm sure most, if not all of you, know that they're eventually going to get married. So, yes, the compassion goes into relationship and it does eventually go to covenant. But at this point in the story, it's just relationship. But not only in the case of Naomi from Ruth or Ruth from Boaz does compassion go to relationship to covenant. But in our relationship with the Lord himself, we can see compassion going to relationship, going to covenant. What could have been the Lord's response to the fall? Oh, let's wipe them all out and start again. I'm finished with that lot. I want them to earn their way into heaven. It's going to be an empty place. But the Lord's response to the fall is one of compassion. And the ultimate in compassion is, of course, Jesus taking on flesh and dying on the cross. So that if we respond, we can have a relationship with God. And that relationship, of course, goes into the covenant that we have collectively as believers and individually as individual believers. Just as with Ruth towards Naomi and Boaz towards Ruth, also with all of us, the Lord has responded to us with compassion that goes into relationship, that goes into covenant. Otherwise, as I said earlier, heaven would be a very, very empty place. Compassion goes to relationship, and that relationship goes into covenant. The book of Ruth, in a sense, is a forerunner of two bigger meta-narratives. The first one, Gentile believers being engrafted with Jewish believers into Israel. The second meta-narrative that it is a forerunner of is Jesus's mission on earth, that God's response to our sin, instead of just wiping us all out, was the compassion of sending Jesus to the cross, which means that we can have a relationship with God, which means that we are covenant with him. Compassion going into relationship, going into covenant. Thank you for listening.